You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, this is Deep Tran.
I'm Jose Solis.
And we're your token theater friends, people who love theater so much that I'm not entirely sure if I'm okay with political pundits using Evita memes.
I mean, especially not when it's that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel about the Lincoln Project's Evita, Trump Evita ad?
Well, I mean, it was like clearly what he was going for, because remember, like, it is so disturbing. We're living in the apocalypse. It's like dystopia. It's like the end of it's everything at once. Because Evita's one of his favorite musicals. You know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm like, girl, is this what you have been going for all this time? I mean, with like the really like, yeah. But also like the blonde. Do you think he went blonde for Evita? I'm like, come on. So I don't know how I feel about that, to be honest, because I love Evita so much. And although Eva Perón herself, you know, I have issues with Eva Perón and what she meant in terms of like, you know, like being friends with fascists and all of that. I love Evita, and there's nothing about this administration or about this man that I'm ever going to love. So I still don't know how I feel about any of that.
Yeah. He's never going to be a gay icon.
Fuck no. Unless he like, I don't know, like grabbed all of us and like brainwashed us and tortured us and like forced us to like love him or something like that. Gross. I don't know. But no, God, no.
Oh my God, do you think like in 50 years someone's going to do an Evita revival and it's going to be Trump set?
Ew.
Because I feel like someone's going to try it if we're all still alive.
Ew. I mean, Melania as Juan Perón. God, no. And what, like Claudia Conway is going to be Che?
Yeah.
No. Please, God, save me, rescue me from that future. I don't.
I don't want it.
I don't want that timeline, no.
I feel like anything related to the Trump administration in 2020, like, I don't want to see any media about that until I'm dead.
There's that Showtime or Stars or whatever show that's already happening. That's, like, so gross. You've seen that, right?
No, I did see the Michael Cohen show.
Ew.
Or was it Michael? Or Jeff Bridges is playing, no. Jeff Bridges is playing, oh my God, the FBI agent who emails.
No,
emails.
No, mom. Jeff Daniels is playing
Jeff Daniels.
Comey.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
You're like,
sorry.
A white Jeff.
Yeah. One of the white Jeffs who was middle aged.
The only reason why I even consider like maybe like watching that was because I love Holly Hunter and she plays Sally Yates. But I'm like, nope. I cannot with this. So like, it's already happening. So the Evita Trumpita thing is going to be happening at some point.
Well, I look forward to seeing your version.
My online. Version? God, I hope. No. Let's just.
Yeah, I tweeted it and someone was like, did Jose write this?
Yeah,
and
no.
I'm like,
God,
wow,
no.
The brand is strong.
I don't know. Like, we should stop talking about this man. When he was like out and I saw him like doing all his like, you know, like crazy nonsense in the balcony, the first thing that I immediately thought was like, dexamethasone me from my head to my toes. Because that motherfucker was rainbow high. Right? Didn't you hear that steroids make you like, yeah. He was high AF. And I mean, imagine, I kind of felt like good for him that he was so high.
Except then he started, can you do a parody about all the tweeting?
Oh, yeah.
Because that was a rainbow high.
That was, yeah. I was like, you go, girl. Like, go get. People should not be in control of the nuclear codes if they're going to be, like, rainbow high like that, right?
Mm-mm. I need you to hook up with Brandy Rainbow and just and do that. That would that actually fit the rhyme scheme, and I am so proud of you.
Randy Rainbow High. Okay, let's talk about shows before we give more attention to this man.
Okay, what shows are we talking about today?
We saw two film and TV versions of shows that we know. We're going to be talking about The Boys in the Band, which is on Netflix. And then we saw the Prime Video series, The Goes Wrong Show, which is a version of The Play That Goes Wrong. But instead, it's like tiny episodes, and it's very funny. So, shall we start with The Boys?
Yes, let's talk about The Boys.
Ugh. That's my review.
I've never seen it, and then I watched it. I'm like, oh my god, I am so excited to talk to Jose about this, because I know he's going to have opinions about Robin De Jesus. Give me all of your opinions.
I have a really soft spot for Robin, and I was very glad. Didn't he get, like, Tony nominated for the Broadway version?
Mm-hmm.
He was, in fact, like, the, I don't know, I don't like when, it's not his fault, obviously, but I don't like when white writers and white directors ask BIPOC performers to do almost like parodies of, you know, themselves. Not themselves as the person, but of what they think the person represents. We saw it in that show whose name I won't say because, like, I don't want to get death threats anymore. But it was exactly that, right? Where you grab, like, a Latinx character, a Latino character, and just ask them to, like, amp it up to, like, Sofia Vergara it just for the sake of allowing the white audience to, like, oh, he must be Latino, right? Because there's no other reason. And I do like Robin De Jesus a lot. I think he did what he was asked to do, and he did it well. But it's very troubling that it's such a cliche-ridden character in a play that basically, well, in a film adaptation of a play that basically glorifies the suffering of white gay men and how they are the only population that matters when we're talking about LGBTQI people. So I fucking hated this thing.
Thank you for watching it for me. The Boys in the Band, the film, is based on The Boys in the Band, the play, which was a 1968 play by Mark Crowley, who actually died earlier this year. Not from COVID, he just was old. And
I love that.
And it was revolutionary for its time because it was one of the first mainstream portrayals of gay men and the double lives that they lead. And I believe it kind of fell out of favor with the LGBT community around the 70s and 80s with Stonewall. And then it got back into favor very recently with the 2018 Broadway revival. And then Ryan Murphy saw the Broadway revival and he produced it for Netflix. I was watching it and it's set in late 60s, early 70s. You know it's a period piece. As when I was watching it, I was like two minds about it. I was like, okay, I could see how these portrayals of these men at the time was new. Like, it was talking very candidly about how torturous it feels to not be your authentic self. And at the same time, I was just also wondering, why am I watching this in 2020? What is there anything that this play is telling me right now?
That Ryan Murphy has compromised on Netflix. Otherwise, why are they letting him do all these things? It must be the only reason, right?
There's nothing about this that is relevant right now, you think?
I mean, do you think anything's wrong?
I don't know. I'm not part of the.
No, but I mean, but you're like an informed, smart audience member who knows actual gay people, gay men specifically in real life. This is not how, right? I mean, see, I'm not even making sense. I sound like Will from Will and Grace right now, just like.
I could see that part about, because you and I have always talked about how the gay community is really cruel to each other in terms of just the unrealistic body image expectations and just the machismo of it all. And so maybe that could be an angle. I don't know.
You know what I think is an angle? How it's white gay men in like their 40s and 50s, which is the average age of like the cast in this, right? they insist on calling themselves boys. And I'm like, you stopped being boys like 3 decades ago. That's the only thing that I was like, this is relevant. The men, the actors in this production, in this film version, are really handsome men, right? Why do they all look like... You remember that marionette? That creepy marionette from, like, the 50s? That, what was his name? Like, Charlie something? It was, like, they all look really, like, plastic. And I don't like to comment on the appearance of actors, but don't they all look like they have too much makeup on? They look like they have too much Facetune on. And that's probably because they're, like, playing really, really young men when none of the men in, you know, none of the actors are that age anymore. So it's very strange. It was almost like a perverse, like, Sunset Boulevard kind of production for me. Like, I saw Ryan Murphy, like, wanting to preserve this piece that's no longer relevant in, like, what's that thing where you preserve things? Like, that bug from...
Amber?
Yes, from Jurassic Park. It's kind of like that. It's wanting to preserve this piece that's no longer relevant by even, I don't know, making it even, like, look terrible and, like, look like it's been polished too much. I was like, Zachary Quinto, you have not been 30 for like 100 years. Like, who are you kidding?
Yeah, it's around the 32nd birthday of one of the characters, played by Zachary Quinto, who they say is ugly, but then you're just like, it's Zachary Quinto. That is not believable, even if you put a really bad wig on him.
Yes, we have seen his abs, and he's 43, so he stopped being 32 even a decade ago.
It's so nice, though. You rarely see men playing younger.
Well, yeah, I know, right? If white gay men love commenting on the looks of female actors, I guess we're allowed to say how terrible everyone looked in this movie. Except for Robin. Robin looked gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. Robin and, oh my god, who is the black actor?
I forgot his name. It's so white. Let me see.
It's so white.
Boys in the Band.
I don't actually understand why the title is that. They're not in a band? They're not getting the band back together. They've been in contact.
It's Michael Benjamin Washington.
Michael Benjamin Washington. Oh, yes. 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 Fires in the Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a better showcase of his talent than whatever the heck he was not able to do in Boys in the Band, because he was like the other BIPOC character, of which there was just one in like a 10-member cast. Just off to the sidelines, just supporting the white people and all their fuckery.
I mean, that's exactly what this play is, and what the movie is. And it's not even like a well-made movie. Like,
it's just a play.
Yeah, but was it me or
it
like...
It feels like a play.
But nothing about it, you know, none of the performances were modulated for a camera. They were all like acting like they're all freaking Norman Desmond, larger than life. And like that guy from the Big Bang Theory, what's his name? Jim Parsons?
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I was like, holy shit.
I think the reason, actually, that you didn't feel like it was well made for the screen was because Joe Mantello directed it, and he directed the Broadway revival, and he's a fine director. Like, there are some very stylish shots, like the shots of Zachary Quinto coming up the stairs, and you see the rings on his hand. I was very into that. I love little detailed shots. Did you notice, like, why did they use a fish lens so much? Like that little fish eye lens. It made their faces look gigantic.
And they also looked like they were made out of plastic. I think it was like that thing where Ryan Murphy was like, boys, we have Netflix money. So they're like, let's use every lens and let's try to do everything. Let's try to do everything we can with this. I really like Joe Mantello. And this is like me being just like exaggerating things. But I feel like Ryan Murphy is one of those creatives right now who gets control over everything, even if it's not necessarily directing the shows that he's in. If it's a Ryan Murphy production, you sense him hovering over everything. You know, it kind of fits into the Ryan Murphy universe where like everything's like too much, a little bit too much, right? And I fear that maybe he had too much of a say in what Joe Mantello wanted to do, because like the performances, you know, those performances kind of work on stage, but they definitely don't work on film anymore. Unless yeah. It's silent film.
Maybe if it's camp. They were so close to getting over to the other side of it.
The film itself is so lacking in self-awareness of what it is as a film. Didn't you like get the sense like when this thing ended, you know, like when they shot, when they wrapped production, they were like, oh, we're going to change the world. And we're going to change the people from the South when they see how amazing gays are. And I'm like, no. Like, this film is, like, empty. It's, like, so shallow. And it's not a good movie. So I don't even know what to say.
I feel like the characters aren't really characters, because when it was written, it was very much like, I want to offer you a panorama of what the experience is like, which means nobody is well-developed, aside from maybe Jim Parsons' character, and you still can't figure out why he's so pissed off all the time and why they're all friends with him. It's like, I love my friends, but even if they insulted me that much in one evening, like, no. No. Especially if I was, like, the only person of color in the room, like, and just got punched to, like, no. Like, why would you stay there?
Have you ever been to Julia's?
No, what is that?
It's one of, like, the classic gay bars in the West Village. It's, like, a block from Stonewall. It's one of the iconic bars, one of the iconic gay bars in New York. And the movie kind of feels like Julia's, because Julia's is basically attended by gay men, mostly white gay men, who were around during Stonewall. So the amount of bitchery and camp, and but also humor, that's what Julius feels like. But there is sense of humor, and it's not mean. And boys in the band, all the characters are just mean. Why are they friends?
Why are they friends? At the end, when Zachary Quinto was like, I'll call you tomorrow to Jim Parsons' character, that was, you know, that says something about friendship, about how strong these friendships are, because they need to be strong. But at the same time, it doesn't give you an excuse to just be mean to each other with for no reason.
No, I think it's like one of the most pervasive cliches that exists when it comes to gay men, and it's that they're supposed to be mean to each other, and also by default be mean to other people, which is something that white gay men continue perpetuating. Like I said before, you know, like if you go to like fashion blogs and like stuff like that, white gay men are always talking about women's faces. And I'm like, motherfucker, have you looked at yourself in a mirror recently? This feels like a relic already, this movie. I don't know, there's much more interesting things to watch on Netflix that are queer.
Yes, recommendations, Jose. Give people the recommendations.
Just don't watch this. Watch anything but this.
Pose is great. Ryan Murphy may have created it, but Janet Mock is the showrunner. So Pose is great.
I mean, go Janet. Let's move on. I don't want to talk about Ryan Murphy anymore.
All right, we're going to have to when the prom comes out.
The only reason for that is Meryl and Nicole. So yes, I'll put myself through that.
Okay, our next show is the Goes Wrong show that's made by the same production, the same British production company as the people who made the play That Goes Wrong, which was on Broadway for like a couple years and then it moved off Broadway. And it's basically a slapstick evening at the theater where a bunch of actors are trying to put on a show and, you know, things go awry, set pieces fall, people fall off set pieces. Lines get flubbed, props don't work. It's not deep. You know, it's not profound. You're just going to go and laugh and feel better about your life. And for actors, you know, who go through so much when they're making shows. And the Goes Wrong show, it's 10 30-minute episodes on Amazon Prime. And Jose and I watched two. And they do the same thing, but within different plays within 30-minute time period. The conceit is the same. They try to do a show and it doesn't go that well and it's funny. Turn off your brain. Just turn off your brain. Just don't expect anything. I feel like it does get a little bit old, so it's not a bingeable thing. You know, if you need something to cleanse your brain at the end of the day, this is a fun 30 minutes to spend.
You saw it on Broadway, right?
Yeah, I did.
Did you enjoy it on Broadway?
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy that when big set pieces fall. That's really fun.
You were like, neutral chaos.
Exactly. Smash it all.
So you just said that this thing isn't bingeable. I watched every episode. I loved this show so much. Like, I loved it. Like, I had to, like, ration it by the end because I was like, oh, no, I'm almost done with all of them. I couldn't stop. I watched, like, my stomach hurt from laughing. I fed myself a little edible every time before I had to watch it. And then during one of the episodes, I was eating cereal also, because, like, cinnamon, what's that cereal called? Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Yeah, came up with, like, a churro version, and it's, like, my favorite thing in the world right now. So I filled a bowl with those and, like, some oat milk, and I almost choked. I'm not kidding. I almost choked, because I was laughing so much, so hard from watching this. I thought it was absolutely genius, and I couldn't stop, because it's, like, I love the fact that it's a series, yes, and it's self-contained episodes, But the troupe in the actual show, it's like so meta because it's like actors playing characters. So the actors as characters, you kind of become familiar because they each have their thing. You know, there's this woman who's always like looking at the at the audience and like throwing those like come hither looks. There's this guy who I loved so much who's like always like he lives for the applause, like go Lady Gaga. And like whenever like someone like cheers, he does the same thing over and over and over again. And I found it so endearing. And there's this like really hot like prop guy who's always like just like walking.
Yeah. It's like splashing water or like accidentally hitting people.
It reminded me a lot of like Benny Hill and like Monty Python. I just found it so delicious. It was so refreshing. And like you said at the beginning, it really made me miss live theater because it's one of those, the show will go on kind of thing where it's like, oh my God, which episodes did you watch?
Oh, I watched the first and the second episode.
So it was the one about like the Nazis and the one about...
Yeah, yeah. The horror, the lodge.
Oh my God, you need to go watch. I mean, maybe you don't need to, but maybe, I don't know if you're a dad, because like, it felt like a very dad show to me.
It's such a dad show.
Yeah, like I told my father, like, you need to watch this right now. You need to watch or have your dad watch the, like the law show, like the jury episode. And also one called 90 Degrees, which is supposed to be set in this, like, you know, like Southern. So it's like the Brits doing like American Southern accents. It's called 90 Degrees.
God.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be this like wet, like moist Southern drama about like a dad dying. It's like very Tennessee Williams. But it's like just to give you an idea of the kind of humor that they're going for here. At the beginning of the show, in like a very like, I'm Laura Linney and this is PBS Masterpiece, the director comes out and tells the audience, you know, like we're about to see a play and this is what the play's about. But he also lets people know that something went wrong even before the play started. And in the case of 90 Degrees, for instance, he tells people that the set designers read the name of the show and assumed that the sets were supposed to be built at 90 degrees. It is incredible. Like, you need to, like, get stoned or something or, like, get a few drinks or whatever. But this is, like, such a balm. I loved it so much.
For me, I had the same feeling as when I watched the Broadway show, which is how they do that. Especially because this version, there's like 10 different sets that just all look different and have a different aesthetic and they all fall apart in different ways. And I'm just like, oh my God, so much money was put into this because it is much easier to do a show that goes right than a show that goes wrong.
I know, right? Because it's also like such testament to the fact that this is, they're directing chaos. One of the reasons I think why I found the show so bingeable and so addictive was because we are living in chaos right now, but no one is directing it. Like we have no idea what the fuck is going to happen with this pandemic. You know, the nuclear codes were given to like a mad person. No one's in control. So the fact that I was watching chaos that was controlled and that was directed by someone and that was done with care and appreciation for the craft of theater, of filmmaking and of television actually gave me such relief. I was like, I wish the people who are directing this show were directing the world right now.
Oh my God. Would you want to see them do a version of this presidency?
God, no. Don't fuck that presidency. I do, however, want to see them do a version of Evita.
And then she falls off the balcony.
And play over.
I know. I've always wanted to ask them, like, I feel like it must be so meticulously timed. How do you know when something actually goes wrong? Because in live theater, something always goes wrong.
I guess for them, if something went wrong, would be something actually going right, right? I mean, like a set not falling apart. Oh my God, you need to watch 90 Degrees because, like, there's a dog and it's... it's like this, like, robot dog on a skateboard. It is amazing. It's amazing.
So much money. The Brits give their masterpiece theater so much money. Would like to see the same here.
Yeah, because it was also like a celebration of like what a live audience does to theater, which is why mm-hmm. it felt like theater to me because, you know, the audience was reacting. And I always love to hear, you know, in the laugh tracks, like with the live audience, I always love to hear the one person who laughs louder than everyone else because they just can't help it. And there's like plenty of those in this show. I loved it so much.
Yeah, it's like chaotic SNL.
Yes, yes. But actually funny. SNL hasn't been funny for forever.
Yeah, yeah. SNL's not consistent. This is actually pretty consistently funny because it's, you know, it's camp. It's pratfalls. It's like optical, really cool optical illusions that you don't realize are optical illusions until the things fall apart. And you're like, oh my God, how did they design that set? Like, I was just trying to figure out mentally, like, how this is all happening.
And also, like, me wondering, like, how are these actors not breaking? I would die.
Yes! Such professionals. Do you remember our interview with Harriet D. Foy? And she was talking about how she would love to do the play that goes wrong.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Someone call her. Call her to do this show. Call her.
Or can you imagine like a P-Valley episode that goes wrong? Just stay away from the poles, girls. Don't get on the poles.
Yeah, don't do acrobatics on the pole. They're not stable.
It's like so funny because like I was watching it and I remember this one time that I interviewed Isabelle Huppert. I always want to ask actors this question. I always forget to ask. And I was like, what do you do when you need to like sneeze or yawn? So Isabelle Huppert was telling me the adrenaline usually prevents you from that. Like, cause you're like so in the moment that you can't help it. But then she was playing, I think it was, Mary, Queen of Scots or something in Paris last year. And she sneezed when the curtain went up and someone in the front row went like, bless you. I love when shows go well, but it's such testament to why I miss theater so much, you know, live theater so much and like being there so much that whole thing of being in community and laughing with someone and multiplying that with like lots of people made me, wish that we were in pre-March times more than.
You can try to be an audience member on SNL. They're paying them now.
Oh God, no, I want to laugh. I don't want to go to SNL.
You might see Jim Carrey play Joe Biden. All right. Well, if you want to watch The Goes Wrong Show, it is now available on Amazon Prime. Get high, get drunk, binge it. Yeah. Have a laugh. And who did we interview today?
Our guests today are Eva Noblesada and Lea Salonga, who are starring in the new film Yellow Rose, which is about a Filipino-American young woman played by Eva, who finds out her mom is undocumented, and when her mom is sent to like prison, because this is how this country works, she must find a way to survive and thrive. And she also happens to be very talented and dreams of becoming a country musician. So we talked to Eva and Lea. Oh my God, like I love them both so much. We talked to Eva and Lea about a bunch of stuff, including the movie, obviously, and video games, and what they have been up to during quarantine.
Yeah, so let's go to that interview.
Lea Salonga and Eva Noblesada, thank you so much for joining us. I was so excited when I saw that the two of you were in Yellow Rose, mostly because I had a very nerdy question to ask you. And it's like when I've interviewed you separately, I'm obsessed with the fact that you play video games together and that you're like both huge video game nerds. So, I mean, can we start talking about that? Like, have you been playing a bunch of video games in quarantine?
I mean,
Okay, you first.
I will say, I've never actually had the opportunity to play with you. Like, actually, like, I have a controller, you have a controller, we're having a great time, a bottle of wine's open, we're playing something. I've never had that. It actually sounds a lot of fun, but no, I haven't been playing much in quarantine just because I've been trying to do everything I can to stay sane and to take money from people who have a lot of it.
Good plan.
Thank you.
In quarantine, what have I played? I've played a little bit of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, ooh, which is incredible. I've played Kingdom Hearts, which is really cute. It's like playing Final Fantasy with Disney characters. And then there's Final Fantasy VII, which is a remake of a previous Final Fantasy game. But because the technology has advanced so far since the original Final Fantasy VII was produced, stuff has changed. The story arc pretty much remains the same, but now all the bells and whistles are just like jacked up. And there are a few more additional elements to it that take advantage of the tech. And it's just breathtakingly beautiful and and quite addicting. I remember just sitting on the couch in my den playing this, and I look to my left and I see the sun coming up. I'm like, yep, I've been sitting here a while. Yeah, you get really obsessed really, really fast. And the characters are actually very fully developed. The voice acting is fantastic. I can't really find anything wrong with it, except it takes a lot to get past the very first boss. It's difficult. But the cool thing about it is that you learn the hard way exactly which buttons to push in order to get your desired result. Mm. So, yeah. So they make it tough, but they make it tough for a good reason. And so I'm not angry at the game for doing it. So now I'm waiting for the next Assassin's Creed, the next one to come out, which is Valhalla. And I think it's supposed to be really violent and bloody, because we're talking Vikings now.
Oh, yeah.
To England. So it's like, isn't there like a series called like Vikings on the History Channel?
Yeah, there is. There's a Vikings one and like another like more starsy, showtimey.
Yeah,
one.
I think it's Stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember seeing maybe one or two episodes of Vikings and thinking, if Valhalla is going to be anything like that, this is going to rock so hard. I'm going to, it's like, goodbye, sleep. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, my Thanksgiving is going to be very, very happy.
Is this on PS4? What console you
both,
think?
Both the PS4 and Xbox. So,
yay.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't have started asking about video games, because I thought there were going to be like amazing stories about the two of you playing on set while you were, you know, while we were in between.
No, I hate
18 days
people
to shoot.
So I tend to be antisocial when it comes to video games. I mean, there are people who like to play Overwatch or PUBG and socialize and play with their friends. My daughter does that. I'm kind of antisocial with video games. I don't like talking
I agree.
To people. I don't like interacting with actual human beings. I'm just...
Period.
I'm an introvert. You know, I jokingly say, because I hate people. I mean, I don't in real life. But when I'm playing a game, I'd like to just focus on my solitude and isolation and just go through this adventure on my own. Yeah.
But it requires focus, and not everyone understands it. And sometimes they'll be like, oh my God, look at this meme. And I'm like, shut up. I like people-ish. I don't like company.
Well, maybe it depends on the company and the company. Yeah.
I don't mind. The only company I've had for the past 7 months is Reeve, and he hasn't gotten tired of me yet. But so,
okay. Like he would.
He probably is. I
don't think so.
But yeah, that'd be cool. I have to download GTA and Tomb Raider, because I'm playing Call of Duty. The last time I played it was like 4 months ago, because I got really stressed. I was like, I need to hit a Nazi. But I got really stressed. But I need to download those two other games. And I kind of want to get Guitar Hero, just because I'm feeling crazy. I don't know. I just know that I'll buy the guitar. I'll have one really fun night. And then I'll see the guitar and get very annoyed, because I live with an actual musician, and the fact that I'm playing that kind of guitar and having like it in the corner.
It'll be hilarious, because I know some guitar players that have played Guitar Hero, and they
are horrible at it.
One of them has says it's actually harder playing Guitar Hero than the actual guitar.
Wow.
So he was like, okay.
Make Reeve Carney play Guitar Hero.
Can I actually?
Actually would be something. That would be online content I would want to watch.
I just want to see
how he's able to negotiate that.
That would actually be very funny. But you should probably try that. We'll have it be a surprise.
Oh my God. It comforts me so much to hear both of you say that you're introverts, because I'm the same way, where when I tell people I'm a journalist and I'm also an introvert, they're very surprised. Because my job is talking to people, but I actually don't like being around actual people in my real life, which makes quarantine a really great experience for me, actually.
I know! I'm like, yay, isolation, solitude, woo! I know, it seems like a very wrong thing to say, and you know, that my quarantine experience has actually been quite invigorating and educational and lovely and quiet and restful. And there are a lot of people who can't relate to how I'm dealing with it. I'm like, it's okay. Everybody will have their own quarantine experience, everybody's going to have their own takeaway from this. Some people are going to thrive in isolation. My daughter is the same as me, and she's doing online schooling. Mm. And she's happy because she gets to distance herself from teenage drama. So yeah. she's like, I like this. I like being in my room and doing schooling this way. Like, yeah, you're definitely my child. yeah, you're definitely my kid. She loves video games. She loves to sing. She loves musical theater. A lot of kids her age are listening to pop music. I listen to more pop music than she does. She's going to log on to like Broadway HD or whatever and watch An American in Paris,
yeah.
And be really happy with stuff like that. That's, she likes, and she loves me. Those two are like on constant repeat for her. So I'm like, I'm not going to tell you not to watch musical theater. That would be hypocritical.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but yeah, it's like, no one should ever discount or poo-poo anybody else's quarantine experience only because it's unique to you and how you respond to it is how you respond to it. I mean, I do love my friends, but I'm perfectly happy entertaining myself at home. I'm like this anyway, even without a pandemic, so it's all good.
Yeah, that's nice.
One of the biggest, one of the saddest things for me during this whole time has been the fact that I won't get to see both of you on the big screen because you were both luminous in the film. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about, you know, like, Leia, like, you're in a few scenes, but you leave such a, you know, you're so powerful. And I was like, I would love to hear you talk about how you built that, you know, that relationship that we see in the film. Because, like, I could imagine, you know, Leia, your character's backstory. I was like, I want to know how she got to be how she was.
That's the nice thing about something where the backstory is not so defined. But because I have relatives like that, I didn't have to do a whole lot of research to figure her out, which is a great thing and a not so great thing, you know, as far as members of my family are concerned. But yeah, it's nice for people to be able to look at her and just try to imagine and fill in the blanks on their own as to what her story might have been. And how did she get to America? How did she get married to this person? How did she wind up in this situation where she does have some affluence and, you know, be and to find herself in a position where she's actually able to help somebody. And I won't spoil the rest of it. I mean, there is that. But yeah, she's not exactly the most likable person. And it's nice to be able to play against what people might expect of me. Because I tend to be, the one that people tend to like in a show or whatever. So it's nice to actually be somebody that no one knows how they're going to feel about her at whatever point. It was also really helpful that my scenes were shot at the very beginning of the process of making this film, only because, I mean, our two characters, Eva's and mine, aren't exactly, you know, chummy with one another. And if we had actually filmed it much later in the process, I think it would have been much more difficult to kind of backpedal into a place where there is tension and there is an obvious emotional separation between the two.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I love what you're saying, Leia, about playing against type, because even when I saw you on screen, I was thinking, oh my God, her aunt's Leia Salonger. She's going to save her and it's all going to be okay. And then it, ha, ha, ha.
Psych. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, but I'm actually really curious about, like, because the two of you play Filipino-Americans so rarely on stage or on screen, and the movie talks so much about, and especially with the interactions between the two of you, about class within the community, the Filipino-American community, about, like,
the division between undocumented and those who are citizens. And so were you hoping to like create conversation within a community around these issues, especially right now?
Right. So much credit for that goes to Diane, because she was one of the ones that wrote the film. And if conversations start coming up as a result of watching this, if people see what's happening and find themselves relating to the people and the situations, then I guess all of us as a collective part, you know, and part of this movie will have done something good if it sparks that. But I think any Filipino American will have been witness to that kind of classism within the community.
Eva, there have been two moments during quarantine where you have completely like blown my mind. And the first one was, holy fuck, what was that incredible rendition of The Man That Got Away in The Night of a Thousand Judys? That was incredible. It was like an opera almost in like 4 minutes, because like you acted the entire song without like, you know, like leaving the shot. And I was like, I cannot wait to see you direct a film or something at some point. And the other moment was when I was like, I love the poster for the film so much. And you shot the picture in your home. So
they were like, go to Brooklyn to photographer. I was like, absolutely not. I was like, I barely left my house. What makes you think I'm going to go and go sit in a studio and have somebody I don't know shoot picture? But yeah, it was kind of funny because they sent me like, well, first off, I don't know if I should be saying this, but I think it's very funny. I was blonde and obviously do not have a fringe right now. So all of that crap is totally edited. That was like, and also they sent me like budget version of the costume. And like in the film, my final scene shirt, it's like a beautiful silk, like Western shirt with like a silk red tie and like a really nice hat. They sent me like, it was like cloth. It was like a craft material for clothing. And thankfully my partner had bought me the guitar in the film for Christmas, you know, because he's perfect. And so I had that. That was like the only bit of authenticity I had. I mean, I was wearing fuzzy socks in the shoot for Pete's sake, but he was literally shot on an iPhone, edited bangs, like edited hair color. It was just kind of like exactly what you'd expect for a quarantined photo shoot. So yeah, that was kind of crazy that we were able to do that.
That's pretty cool, because like I'm curious, you know, like I was like, Eva, like you're a natural born director and apparently also a natural born photographer. So like, what are some skills that you have picked up in quarantine that you suddenly like, oh, I never thought that I was going to be doing this in my whole life?
Pole dancing. I'm very good at that. I'm extremely good at that. Talking to myself a lot more, just because like I'm like 30% introvert, 70%. I wouldn't say extrovert. I think there's a middle ground. I can't think of the word for that.
Is that the one?
I think so. Yes. I get major social anxiety. So in fact, now that I've been in quarantine, if I were to go back into a setting with people, I would freak out. I don't handle those well. And I don't have my doctor anymore to give you beta blockers. So I'm like trying to make sure that I don't go into situations like that. But yeah, I would say pole dancing. I've been reading a lot. Reading a book, two books right now, one called Braiding Sweetgrass. I just want to get, like, take a juicy bite into the mysterious world of the dark side of capitalism. I'm going into that direction with my mind right now. Like, I mean, I know the FBI agent's watching right now, and I think you're doing your job, but also, like, what the hell is going on with this country? And I'm also reading a book called Braiding Sweetgrass and a book called Blood and Government, The War and Race, about imperialism and colonialism in the Philippines. Just because I think this is a perfect time for me to start understanding quite literally the history, both political and historical, for America and also for the Philippines. Just because, you know, I think that's important for me to learn. But other than that, I don't know. I'm not actually picking up skills. I just am trying to literally be sane. My partner loves, he can work all day and be happy. I actually miss my friends. I don't have any friends in New York, but all my friends are in London. I go a little crazy at times, but I think that's, I just ride the wave.
Yeah. What I've been trying to tell myself during this time is the way I feel today isn't going to be the way I feel an hour from now or tomorrow. And you just got to You just gotta feel your feelings.
Oh yeah, I've also been painting. Like I'm actually not horrible at it. And I just finished a 30x40-inch canvas, which is the biggest one I've done so far. So I have to go back down to Blick. I love saying that in the Filipino accent. It's an art material store in New York City. I have to go back, and I want to see if I can get a bigger one. But yeah, it's fun.
You have more room in your apartment than I thought. Wow.
Well, no, this is my – my actual apartment is being – my friend's staying there right now. So, like, I have to keep everything in, like, a tiny corner here because he has a lot of stuff.
Did you get any guitar playing tips from Reeve during the process for
– No, I didn't know him then. We were not together then. The universe was like, wait, just wait. No, I didn't get any tips from anybody. I literally went back in – and it sounded like shit, to be honest with you. Like, the first day of filming, we did a scene where I have to play the guitar for Diane's daughter, who plays Leia's daughter in the film. Mm-hmm. And that was terrifying. Like, I haven't played guitar in front of anybody in literally 8 years. And then you tell me to play in front of a child and play, keep her entertained. That's kind of fucked up. Like, why would you ask me to do that? Like, because you know that she's going to be like, that's horrible. I don't know, because she's very outspoken, that little girl, and I love her very much. But she would easily be like, why are you doing this? But yeah, I was very bad.
I'm really curious, you know, fingers crossed, someday we'll all be able to gather and go see a show again. And I wonder, when the time comes for theaters to reopen all over the world, are you looking forward more to being in a show or to seeing a show?
Oh. I want to be a part of experiencing a live performance again. But I am not at all excited to do 8 shows a week. I am excited to continue to receive a weekly paycheck because New York rent's expensive and no one cares about the arts. So this is why I literally said to my concert agent, I was like, hey, if there are any like rich white people who need to do like live video concerts or like socially distanced concerts, please let me know. Because your girl needs to pay her rent.
What would I want to do? Once we're able to. Both, I think. I get a thrill out of being in the audience and kind of just getting lost in a show or a concert performance. But it's also so much fun to perform. Mm. I miss performing. I haven't performed on stage since March of this year. I did 2 nights in Dubai at the beginning of March, came home and started hoarding groceries because the lockdowns were going to happen a few days later. Whoa. So, yeah. Thankfully, I mean, there have been some charity gigs, there have been some fundraisers, and now I'm doing corporate gigs from home, which is nice. Which means that, yeah, I get a paycheck and I'm thankful. I'm really, really, really thankful that we can do that. The experience isn't quite the same as being in a room, whichever side of that orchestra pit you're on, whether you're in the audience or on stage. There's nothing like being in a room and sharing like a heartbeat with however many people in an audience. And that's just something so unique and special. Yeah, I miss singing with live musicians. Just miss the adrenaline rush of that downbeat of an overture and then stepping out and feeling, ironically, that so many eyes are on you, but it still feels like the safest place to be.
Totally.
I miss that. Because right now, singing in my living room into my iPhone, I mean, it's nice, but it's not the most ideal situation. But I'm grateful that I can sing at all and be able to still entertain people.
Virtual concerts are weird. I've done four now, 3 of them at Birdland. And it's just so weird because you're just like, you have a set for like 50 minutes. And I'm with my pianist, so I've been doing this for like 3-4 years, our cabaret show together. And you sing, and then you're so used to like, making conversation with the audience or like making a joke and then laughing. And then, it just feels more natural, but now it's just weird. And I watched back the first one I did. And I was just like, the first time I did the end of the song, I was like, wow, this is fucking awkward. I was like, thank you so much for your applause. Thank you. And I could see, I was like, I'm trying to navigate like how to what to do. It's very strange.
It's hard. But here's the thing. I have watched a couple of online concerts, and they know that their people are applauding for them because I'm in my pajamas. I've got my laptop, on my bed. I'm cross-legged. I'm watching. And I'm cheering like crazy, like a crazy person by myself. So I think knowing that that is what the response is going to be. And I mean, they're not going to tune into you if they're not going to respond
totally.
Or know that, or if they're like, nah, this is not even going to be my cup of tea, they won't even bother. But if there's a viewer that tunes in to watch you, I think you can trust that there is going to be a definite reaction and some sort of connection. So me on my bed knowing I'm going, whoa, this is amazing! And I'm clapping and I'm screaming. And even though I'm by myself, knowing that that's exactly how I'm going to react when I see an artist that I love.
Yeah.
So I just have to, so when it's my turn to shoot myself and do an online thing, if there's somebody tuning in, I have to trust that that's what the audience is going to do. So knowing that, it's comforting knowing that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a nice thought.
I do miss clapping for people, though, just to, as an audience member, I want to show my appreciation.
With other people.
Yeah. Cool. I wish they'd turn on the Zoom screens at the end of those and just be like, oh, here are all the people who are just watching you. Here's some applause.
Yeah, there was one gig I did that did that. Exactly that. And you could actually turn on your microphones and clap, and then it felt incredible because
there's
a lot of people. So yeah, so if they could do that at the end of every concert or every streaming experience that you do, then that might actually help.
Yeah,
because then you have an idea of just who's out there and how appreciative they are, which then makes the artist appreciate the process even more. It doesn't feel like you're performing in a vacuum.
Yes. Would you like to invite our viewers and our listeners to watch Yellow Rose on October 9th and plug anything and everything you have going on from here until, the end of the year at least?
Okay. Eva, go.
I have a podcast. This is what you mean, correct? Just using plug. Okay. I have a podcast called The Amorio Project. It's on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Season 2, our theme of season 2 will be announced in a week. And also, I'm on socials. I'm on Instagram under Lavivia Maria and Twitter, Eva Noblezada. Other than that, I have nothing going on. We're very close to Christmas, you guys. And it's the time of year where the line between the living and the dead is the thinnest. So please stop playing with Ouija board. That's not funny. You're really going to get possessed. Got to stop doing that.
Okay. To everybody watching, please come and see our film Yellow Rose. We open on October the 9th. Please go to thegoldopen.com, and there should be links and a lot of buttons to lead you to how you can buy tickets, and you can even buy private screenings or larger groups. Please go check it out. There should be a list of theaters there where the film is going to show. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get the movie to be number one in its opening weekend, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed for it. Other than that, I bake a lot of bread. I bake a lot of sourdough, and I'm extremely proud of it. One of my friends who went to culinary school, I gave him a couple of loaves to try, and he was like, this reminded me of something in San Francisco, da-da-da-da-da.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, I got it. It was a huge compliment. So I'm very pleased. And so I've just been baking for my friends. And it's just been really therapeutic. So that's my quarantine skill, and I've been flexing it quite a bit. And I'm just getting through this quarantine sane. I have my rabbit holes. I have my bread. Got my family. I'm good.
Surviving is thriving.
Oh, Leia, I have a question for you. When's your Broadway's best great performances?
Oh, November 27. And that's going to be on PBS stations all over the country. That was my second engagement at the Sydney Opera House. We're with the Sydney Symphony. My brother, Gerard Salonga, is our conductor. And that was just such a good time. There's so much musical theater and also a lot of pop music. And I try my hand at singing some Golden Age stuff that's normally not in my voice, but it's like, what the hell? Let's just do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that people tune in to PBS on the 27th. That's Black Friday, I believe, the day after Thanksgiving.
Thank you both so much for joining us. It's always such a pleasure to see you both. Like, you made me feel like it was back in the pre-pandemic days. And congratulations on the film. It's beautiful, and you're both great.
Thank you.
And I hope to see you again very soon.
Thank you guys so much for having us.
Thanks, everybody.
Have you interviewed Leia before?
Yes, I interviewed her when she did Allegiance.
Oh, was it for AT?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I don't think I read it. I'll go find it. You should link to that.
Well, it was about like how white musical theater people are really obsessed with Asians and they don't know how to write Asians correctly. But Allegiance was a step in the right direction. I'm looking forward to more, though.
I know,
this
right?
is all over. Like the K-pop musical.
One of my favorite things about Leia is that, have you seen Leia in concert?
Yes, I have.
She does like pop covers. And I mean, like listening to Leia Salonga do Coldplay is like one of like the highlights of like my musical theater, gay, loving, you know, life.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And Leia's been doing so much in Manila. Like she did A Fun Home and she did Sweeney Todd. And I'm just like, Broadway producers, why are you keeping Leia Salonga away from us? She's doing all this cool shit and you could have her do cool shit over here. Why you be so racist?
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, Leia Salonga's version of Days and Days? Like, I would, like, melt.
I just start crying.
I know, right?
Or Leia Salonga being a crazy Mrs. Lovett. Like, I want more chaotic Leia Salonga. I feel like she doesn't get to do that enough, like she says. That would be good for me.
Yeah, she's always very wholesome, but now we know she bakes, so she would make a perfect Mrs. Lovett in the States. Thank you, Eva and Leia. Yellow Rose is out on October 9th, and it has original songs. Can you imagine, like, if Eva had to perform at the Zoom Oscars next year?
She'd kill it because her home videos are shot very well, but would like to see Eva again in person.
Yeah, me too.
I do appreciate, because this is her first film, and now people can see how good she is. You know, just like her face is just so expressive, and I don't think I've ever really appreciated before because I'm always seeing her like from 10 feet away.
Oh, yeah, she's astonishing. Like, her voice is like incredible, but like her face is like, wow. And you should also go check out the episode that we recorded a few years ago with Eva, where she was doing shows at the Green Room 42nd in New York City.
Our old interview with Eva, we actually interviewed her before she was cast in Hadestown, but she could not tell us she was cast in Hadestown. And we didn't talk about Hadestown because we ran out of time. But next time, Eva, part three, we will get there. We will talk about Reeve Carney. And if you enjoy this episode, we invite you to support us on Patreon. Jose and I edit and produce all of these ourselves, and it would be of great help to us to have some support in our project. If you become a Patreon supporter, you get a lot of goodies like our newsletter and extra bonus Q&As. Our Josh Groban Q&A, we had him singing a little bit for us, which all of our Patreon patrons could see. So if you want all of that, then we invite you to be a Patreon subscriber for as little as a dollar a month. And we also shout out our Patreon patrons every episode. So this week's shout out is to Louisa Lyons, who is working on a database of stage musicals that have been legally filmed and publicly shared. So visit filmedlivemusicals.com. And there's a podcast. We love all theater podcasts and we love online theater. So thank you, Louisa, for this invaluable database.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to say to the people?
Become a patron, join our friend zone. We have some goodies coming up and we love you for your support. And this is, this is like our 17th episode so far, right?
And 18th. This,
holy fuck.
I know, quarantine goes fast. Right?
Three more episodes and we can drink.
Like we haven't already been drinking.
I know,
during
right?
During this.
I know.
Yeah.
Thank you and stay tuned next week because, oh my God, we know who we're talking to next week and we're finally doing it. Can you believe that we've never had her here before?
No, I can't, because I feel like I talk to her and about her
every day,
all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially now. We need her now more than ever.
Ooh, that's a great teaser for, like, you're going to have to stay tuned to find out who we're talking to next week. And until then...
Bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.